everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show planned for all of you today. My guest today will be Tanya Steele, and she is the editorial director of Clean Plates and has a whole list of things that she has done prior to that, and I will be sharing her full bio with you in just a little bit. But first, I want to start off by talking about some of these things going on in the news. Oh, my God, the news just keeps happening so quickly. And, of course, I want to share a recipe with you. But tomorrow is the big day when President-elect gets sworn in. And we really are entering a whole new stage of history in the United States of America. And we really don't know what is going to come, but we do know that we all have to stand vigilant together and come together to really become a voice. We no longer can be complacent and lay back and just watch it all happen in front of us. We have to become participants and really uphold democracy and really understand what that means. And it's going to be imperative to all of us to do that. As much as, you know, for me, it's a bit scary. At the same time, I'm really hoping it is the beginning of everybody really stepping up to the plate and doing what they can to protect the freedoms that we've come to know and that we take for granted, and to know that they are not something we can take for granted. We really have to protect them, and we have to fight for them. And we just can't sit back and let the powerful, rich billionaires take over our country without regard for the 99% of the rest of us. So, and I'm sure all of you listening will do that. So I'm really happy about that. A couple things I want to share with you. I had an interesting experience this week. I joined Slow Food leadership at a governor's meeting, which is basically just a meeting that we all come together, leaders of the local slow food chapters in the New York metro area. And we sat down to a beautiful catered lunch at a very upscale slow foodie type restaurant. And I requested a vegan plate, as did a few others. And, you know, the cocktail hour that was laid out was, you know, local cheeses and you know, some meats and things like that were all local and grass-fed and all that stuff, and grilled bread. So nothing there was edible for me. And then so I asked if they could bring anything out, and they just brought out some plain bread with nothing on it or nothing to go with it. And then for the vegan plate, you know, the main courses, of course, that everyone was eating was a roast chicken, a roast Arctic char, roasted vegetables, hand-mashed potatoes, and a beautiful farro winter squash salad with feta cheese on it. So I asked if they could bring a salad without the cheese. They said, no, they can't. Then they brought out the vegan plate, and at first I was excited because I saw lots of colors and it looked beautiful. And then I took one bite, and I realized what I had in front of me was a plate of really boiled vegetables. There were, you know, the red beets and the golden beets separated, and then there was, you know, in the middle a mound of greens. I think they were broccoli rabe, but they were boiled, so they didn't have that much flavor in them. Some winter squash, some squares of white potatoes. Basically, it was just a plate of boiled vegetables, and I just was dumbfounded. I could not believe that in this day and age, in this type of restaurant, that the chef could not come up with something a little bit more creative and a little bit more flavorful for a vegan guest. Especially, you know, they knew that we were a slow food party and that I was bound to go back and tell people about this. Anyway, it just, you know, it just amazes me as someone who has been cooking for 40 years or so. And, you know, the last 20, a lot of it has been vegan. It just is amazing to me because there's so many delicious things we can do with vegetables. And as someone who, as a slow food leader who is trying to meet everybody where they're at in their food journey, to not be judgmental, but to encourage people to start eating less meat, and take up more plant-based foods, not only for their own health, but for the health of the planet. I know it would be a losing battle if what people think they're going to be giving up is all this delicious food and they're going to be getting plates of boiled vegetables. I mean, we're not going to win them over with that. And so we really need to get creative in the kitchen with all of our vegetables and our grains and, you know, and look at all of these beautiful foods as a whole new assortment of colors and flavor palettes that we can create with. And I'm excited to share with you my recipes this week because for New Year's every year, I go up to Vermont and we have a big chill weekend with lots of old friends. And everyone there is not vegetarian, but, you know, the meat they do serve, like they were serving lamb from lambs that they raised there on the farm. But anyway, so she made a lamb patizio, and that's basically like a Mediterranean or Greek take on lasagna. And it looked good. Everybody was enjoying it. I thought, when I got home, I'm going to make that vegan. And so that's what I did. I, you know, last year came up with a vegan moussaka that was just, that's just so great. And so I took the same filling that I used for the moussaka where I make tempeh, a tempeh filling that is a replacement for that lamb filling. And instead of potatoes and eggplant in the moussaka, I used pasta, and you could use a gluten-free pasta if you would like. But I did leave the eggplant in. I just thought that would add a little bit to it. And so this vegan patizio with eggplant is a really great recipe that I'm going to share with you in just a little bit. But I'm not finished talking about all things going on in the news, because there's a lot going on. Of course, this weekend is the March on Washington, and I will be taking a bus from Long Island down with, I think there's 17 in my immediate circle going with me, but there's two buses going out of Manhasset to Washington. We have to be there at 3:30 in the morning. It's a big trek, but I also know lots of people that are staying more local and doing the sister marches here in New York, and there's one in Boston, and there's in Chicago. I think all the big cities are having sister marches, and I think there's even sister marches around the world. This is a biggie, and these marches, where it's been marketed as, you know, the women's march, it's really not. I mean, I know just as many men going as women. It's really a march to bring everybody together, for us all to come together in solidarity to, again, let the new administration know that we are a voice to reckon with, that we want to stand up to our rights. We are not going to fold and, you know, and become xenophobes and homophobes and racists and climate deniers. And we also want to make sure that our bodies are our bodies and that we are the ones making decisions about our health care and not leaving it up to insurance companies and billionaires who are just looking at their pockets. It's a, you know, it's a bit of a scary time, but I know we can all do it. And coming together for this march is really a big start. Also, I want to share with you, I know this is far in the distance, but out of this meeting that I went to this week with the slow food leaders, we were talking about an event that's going to be happening in July called Slow Food Nations. And this is going to be a big coming together of the country to celebrate food and food diversity and the Arc of Taste, which are products that are in danger of extinction. You know, we used to have so much diversity in our crops. We'd have 20 different types of tomatoes, not just beefsteak, cherry tomatoes. You know, there's so many varieties of so many of the different fruits and vegetables that we have eaten in the past, and many of them are becoming extinct. And so one of the things and one of the missions of Slow Food is to really bring those back and to celebrate them. One of them is the Long Island cheese pumpkin, which I made a soup with last week and shared that with all of you. But there's lots of different foods that are being celebrated. But this coming together is just going to be a big, big, huge food festival and an educational opportunity where there'll be cooking demos and speakers. And, you know, we really want to come together. Many years ago, there was a Slow Food Nation celebrated in San Francisco. This year, they decided they wanted to be have it be more in the middle of the country, so that's why they picked Denver. But July 14th to 16th, and IE Green and Slow Food North Shore are planning on taking a booth there and really putting out some of our favorite and most delicious plant-based foods so that we really can demonstrate to people the wide variety of foods that people can eat that are plant-based. So that's going to be a really exciting thing. So save the dates for July 14th through the 16th. So some of the other things going on, tonight is even a big night. Tonight there are three things that I'm going to share with you going on. One is the Long Island Unity Rally. That is taking place in Bayshore at the LGBT Network Community Center. And this is going to be people coming together to stand up against racism and xenophobia and Islamophobia and sexism and homophobia. And there's going to be, you know, phone banking and just a discussion. So, you know, come if you live in the Bayshore area or feel moved to come to this event, this should be good. Also tonight, Food and Water Watch is hosting a volunteer meetup to resist the Trump administration. That's going to be taking place at the New York Society for Ethical Culture, and that's tonight from 6 to 8. Also tonight, Sustainable Malloy is hosting one of their films from their Sustainable Living film series. And tonight's film is called Just Eat It. It's a food waste story. That begins at 7:30, but the event starts at 6 p.m. with a vegan buffet dinner. Suggested donations $5, and that includes the dinner and the film. But if you don't have any money, you're still welcome to come. So it's just a donation. So anyway, that's, again, tonight, Sustainable Malloy out at the Republic Airport in Farmingdale. Starting tomorrow is NOFA New York's annual winter conference. I'm really disappointed that it happens to be the same weekend as the march, because I do like going to the NOFA winter conference. It's a wonderful opportunity. It's when farmers are not working and they can actually come together and network and create relationships and, you know, learn from each other, share ideas, lots of great speakers. So if you are not going to the March on Washington and doing a local one, you can actually go to the NOFA conference just for Friday or just for Sunday if you're going to be at the march on Saturday. Or if you're not doing the march and that's not your thing, go for the whole weekend. You know, one thing I realize is everyone has to listen to their own heart and resist in their own way. There's no one way that is right for everybody, and I totally respect that. But I do believe that everybody has to find a way to be involved, whatever that is. You know, sitting and meditating and, you know, putting your heart center in the right space is great, but we also all have to take some action. Otherwise, nothing is going to change. So, you know, find your way, find your voice, and then let it be heard. As I already said, the March on Washington is happening on Saturday, along with the sister marches in New York, Boston, and everywhere else. And trying to cash in on this momentum, Planned Parenthood is having an open house meeting on January 23rd on Long Island in Roslyn at the Time Restaurant. That's an all-day event from 1 to 10, people coming together and trying to mobilize people to make change. And I don't really know what's going to be going on all day at that open house, but there is an RSVP, so you can go on to Planned Parenthood website and RSVP to that. Slow Food North Shore is having their New Year's Eve party. Actually, not on New Year's Eve, obviously, but it's a New Year's party, January 29th at the Oyster Bay Brewery. And Oyster Bay Brewery is a new brewery in the area, and we are really happy to celebrate their local beer. And Slow Food members myself included, with I Eat Green, are cooking a whole vegan buffet. Plus, I do believe somebody has donated some venison, so there will be a venison stew there as well. And it should be a fun evening. It's from 5 to 8 at the Oyster Bay Brewery on January 29th. And there's a link to Eventbrite from the Slow Food North Shore website or my website. Also on January 29th, Slow Food New York City is having a chili non carne cook-off. That's going to be taking place at Jimmy's 43, and that's during the day. So technically, you could actually go to the chili non carne cook-off from 1 to 3 and then still come to our party in the evening. So look into that. Food Tank, wonderful, wonderful organization. They're having their annual Food Tank Summit the following weekend, February 2nd, down in Washington, D.C. I've gone to that the last 3 years. It's a great event. I'm actually going to pass this year just because I'm going to be down in Washington this weekend. I just couldn't bear the thought of turning around and going back again. So I'm going to pass this one, but it's a great event, and if you are available, you should check it out. Food Tank has actually been spreading their wings a little bit. They just had a food summit in Chicago, and they have one coming up in Boston. So they're a great organization. If you're not a member, I recommend becoming a member because they just share a wealth of information. February 11th is the second annual City Growers Education Conference in Brooklyn, also a great event. And then Just Food, a wonderful, wonderful nonprofit. They have their annual Just Food Conference. This year will be March 12th and 13th at Teachers College. So save the date for that. And there's lots more, but I'm not going to talk about it anymore. If you want to see the events, you can all go to my website and see all the events there. But now, before we run out of time, I want to share my recipe with all of you, which, as I said, is the vegan patizio with eggplant. There's a whole long list of ingredients. As I say very often in my recipes, if you don't have something, you can substitute something else. I really encourage people being creative, you know, putting things in that you love, leaving things out that you don't love. Make it your own. But this is a wonderful dish that I just created this week, and I'm really happy to share it with you. You're going to start with one eggplant that you're going to, you don't need to peel, just wash it and slice it about a half inch thick slices, actually between a quarter inch and a half inch. And you're going to roast that in the oven just until they're soft. So you're basically going to slice them up. Preheat the oven to 450, brush the eggplant on both sides with a little olive oil. Line a baking sheet with some parchment paper, lay the eggplant out, and you're going to cook it for about 15 to 20 minutes until they're soft. Meanwhile, while that's cooking, you can make the tempeh sauce. The ingredients for the tempeh sauce is 2 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil, 1 medium yellow onion chopped, 2 tablespoons of chopped garlic, 2 8-ounce packages of soy tempeh, or you can use a 5-grain tempeh. This recipe that I made wasn't gluten-free, but if I'm making a recipe that's gluten-free, you always want to make sure that the tempeh you're using is a gluten-free tempeh. 10 baby Bella mushrooms, or if you had large portobello mushrooms, you could use 2 of those. It'd probably equal 10 baby ones. 2 assorted peppers, yellow, orange, green, whatever you have on hand. Peppers, as you know, are one of the dirty dozen vegetables, so you really want to try to get those organic. 1 teaspoon of dried oregano, 3/4 teaspoon ground allspice, a pinch of ground cloves, 1/2 teaspoon of dried thyme, 3/4 teaspoon of cinnamon, 1/2 teaspoon of nutmeg, 1/2 teaspoon of kosher salt, plus more to taste if you like it a little saltier. You'll check it out at the end. 1 15-ounce can of fire-roasted tomatoes and 1 15-ounce can of diced organic tomatoes. 10 sun-dried tomatoes that you're going to pulse and puree, and 2 tablespoons of tomato paste. And so to make the sauce, you're going to, again, with tempeh, I have found over the years that tempeh absorbs a lot of oil, and I'm trying to cook with a little bit less oil. So if you if you pulse the tempeh in a food processor so that it's really crumbly, you can lay the tempeh out on a cookie sheet that you spray with some olive oil And then you can even spray the top of the tempeh with some olive oil. And then bake that in the oven as opposed to sautéing it. That cuts down on a lot of the oil, and it really makes the tempeh beautifully golden brown and crumbly. And it's a wonderful way of doing that. So you're going to lay the tempeh out on the oil parchment paper and bake it for about 10 minutes until it's golden brown. Then meanwhile, in the olive oil, the 2 tablespoons, you're going to saute the onions for about 5 minutes, then add the mushrooms, the peppers, the garlic, and continue cooking that until they're all soft. Then you, when the tempeh is ready, you're going to add that baked tempeh into the big cast iron frying pan that you're cooking all this in. Add the spices, the oregano, the thyme, the allspice, the cloves, the nutmeg, and the cinnamon, and stir that up a bit so that the tempeh takes on these flavors of allspice and cloves, the really aromatic flavors of all those spices. And then I pushed all the vegetables to the side of the pan, so I created an empty space in the middle, and I added the tomato paste and the sun-dried tomatoes there, and just let those cook for just a couple of minutes in the center of the pan so that they get a little toasted before mixing them into all of the vegetables. And then mix them all in with the vegetables, add the salt and pepper, and just taste. Make sure that the salt and pepper seem good for you, and let that simmer for about 10 minutes. Until all the flavors meld and come together. While that's simmering, you can make the cashew sauce. For the cashew sauce, you needed to have soaked the cashews for a few hours first. I usually soak them for about 2 hours. And you can have 2 hours of soaked, I'm sorry, 2 cups of soaked cashews, 2 cups of water, 1 teaspoon sea salt, 1/4 teaspoon of ground nutmeg, and 1 tablespoon of nutritional yeast. And you just pulse that or blend that in a Vitamix until really smooth. And at first, you know, the cashews break up and they're not completely pureed. You really want to blend it long enough so that it really becomes a smooth, smooth, creamy, bechamel type of sauce. And then you're going to cook a pound of pasta according to the directions. You can use regular pasta, whole wheat pasta, or gluten-free pasta, and cook that 1 pound al dente. And then you're going to assemble this casserole. You're going to assemble it first with into a casserole pan that's kind of like 10 by 15 by 2 inches. I used a glass Pyrex one. If you have a lasagna pan, you can use that. If you're going to use a chafing pan, you need a half-size one. A full one, you would have to double the recipe. So anyway, so you put down, sprinkle a few breadcrumbs on the bottom of the pan. Spray the pan first with some olive oil so it won't stick. Put the breadcrumbs down. Then put 1/2 of the pound of pasta, the cooked pasta, down on the casserole pan. Cover it with 1/2 of the eggplant slices and then 1/2 of the tempeh sauce. And then do it again. Put the rest of the pasta on top. Put the remaining eggplant slices on top and put the rest of the tempeh mixture on top. And then you're going to pour the whole cashew bechamel sauce over the whole casserole and let it seep down through the layers. Then you're going to sprinkle the top with some breadcrumbs. Now, I like to toast the breadcrumbs first. I toast them in a heavy skillet with a little bit of olive oil, a little bit of garlic, and some salt. And then I add, after it's toasted, I add a couple tablespoons of chopped parsley to that for some color and some nutritional yeast. And I sprinkle that on top of the casserole. And I baked it in the oven at 350 degrees for about 45 minutes. And then I removed it from the oven. I let it sit for about 5-10 minutes just to allow everything to settle, and then served it. And oh boy, was it good. Really, really delicious. So, you know, I'd love people to make my recipes and give me some feedback. Let me know how you liked it. And I look forward to hearing from all of you. And now it's my pleasure to introduce Tanya Steele to all of you. As I said before, she's the editorial director of Clean Plates, which is a healthy food and wellness content brand. And Tanya's a longtime food journalist. Formerly, she was the editor, director of Epicurious, Gourmet Live, and Gourmet.com. She joined Clean Plates in 2016, and she's also the award director for the Julia Child Award and conceiver of the annual Healthy Lunchtime Challenge and Kids State Dinner
with First Lady Michelle Obama, which had its fifth year this year. I doubt that's going to continue, but we will see. Anyway, Tanya, are you with me?
Yes, I am. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. And I'm sorry I was so long-winded this first half, but there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
So can you start by just sharing with my audience what is Clean Plates and what is their mission?
Sure. Clean Plates is really devoted to helping people understand how to eat healthfully, how to feel good about themselves, how to integrate wellness into their everyday life. We really feel like it's important that people don't feel like it's hard to do to cook and eat healthy, that in fact it's not only easy, but it's something that is incredibly enjoyable and relaxing and sustaining not only to yourself but to your family and to the planet. So we really try to make cooking and eating healthfully as easy and accessible as possible.
And how do you do that? Is it all online?
Yes, we've got actually a variety of touch points for Clean Plates. We do have a cookbook. We have restaurant guides, and we have an app, a restaurant app as well, that you can download for free. But we are absolutely a digital brand first and foremost, and we have a very robust website that has tons and tons of information, whether you're looking for recipes or nutritional information or want to read about food trends, I want to know kind of what the latest thinking is by different wellness gurus. We've kind of got it all covered for you.
Mm-hmm. I've been amazed watching it grow over the years. I mean, a few years back, I had Jared on the show when he was just starting Clean Plates. And at that time, I believe it was really, he just had come out with the first restaurant guide. How has that expanded? Do you still have the restaurant guide?
We do have the restaurant guides. We're not focusing on them as much because that's more of a local thing, although we have a great
sure.
New York City restaurant guide that does have a tremendous amount of Clean Plates approved, vegan and vegetarian, and you know, just wonderful grass-fed restaurants, those types of things. So we do have a great restaurant guide, and the app has all of that information as well. But we also recognize that, you know, not everyone lives in Los Angeles or New York, and that a lot of people are really desperate for this information that, you know, that you are so good at giving out, and we are hopefully as well. So it's something that we really believe that not just, you know, people in the metro area, but people in the country and really across the planet need this kind of information.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is. It's so filled with great information, and I love looking at it. How often do you post? Is it daily now, or it used to be weekly, I think, but now it seems like I'm getting them every day. Is it daily?
Yes, we have a wonderful newsletter that goes out three times a week, and that's free, and that has a lot of information in it, so anyone can sign up on cleanplates.com for the newsletter. But yeah, on the website we post constantly. So we're posting videos and recipes and articles every day that are filled with really good information that anybody can understand and digest.
Mm-hmm. You also cover food trends, which I've enjoyed watching. Where do you see the food trends going this year? Do you have any new food trends that you'd like to share with people?
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting, this universe of healthy food products and ingredients. It's really kind of exploded in the last few years. Now it's such a huge billion-dollar business. Last fall I was at something called Expo East in Baltimore, which was a natural food showcase, and I was astounded, as the journalist who's been in the food industry for over 20 years, astounded by the amount of products that are out there that are so kind of what would have been initially thought of as esoteric are now just so commonplace. So, you know, coconut oil 5 years ago would have been nearly impossible to find, and now it's in every major supermarket. So,
actually, and 20 years ago, it was considered carcinogenic. Don't eat coconut
exactly.
oil.
Exactly. Exactly. And butter is back, which is fantastic because I'm a big butter fan.
Sure.
Speaking of Julia Childs, who is also a big butter fan. But there are a lot of different interesting new food trends that I think you're going to see on a lot of restaurant menus and in a lot of recipes, avocado oil being one of them. You know, we can't get enough avocado at Clean Plates. The minute I put the word avocado in any kind of article, it gets a huge amount of traffic and an open in the newsletter. Avocado oil, similarly, is going to be extremely popular. It's just filled with anti-inflammatory nutrients, and it's got a high smoke point, so it's very easy to cook with. So I think you'll see a lot of avocado oil around.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
seaweed is another big thing that I think you're going to see a ton of. You know, we're kind of late to the game, I think, in this country. Japan, obviously, has been eating seaweed now for millennia. And it's so packed with omega-3s and fiber. Again, it's anti-inflammatory, and it's got very good iodine levels, which is important because a lot of us are not eating salt anymore or processed foods. And so this is a way to replace iodine, which you actually do really need. So
mm-hmm. a question that has come to me many times since Fukushima, and I really haven't known the answer. Do you know, does seaweed absorb any of the radioactivity from the Fukushima fallout that we had? I know the fish have, you know, so.
Right.
Do you know?
That's a good question.
Most of the
seaweed still
is coming from Japan.
I actually don't know, but I do know most of the seaweed that we're getting here is, in fact, from the U.S.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's becoming a big industry here.
Good, good. I haven't seen any nori. You know, I used to always talk about sushi as being such a healthy food, or even vegetarian sushi, whether you eat the fish or not. But, you know, the fish sushi, you know, you now have the seaweed that could have, you know, contamination from Fukushima, and the rice has arsenic, and the fish have mercury. You know, so it's, you know, I'm constantly telling people you have to eat a wide variety because everything has some problems.
That's very true. And I really think that eating a wide variety of foods is really key to keeping healthy and sustaining it for a lifetime, because if you're just eating the same kinds of foods, at a certain point you're going to get really bored and, you're just going to start eating junk or whatever it is that's closest to you. So I think eating a wide variety not only gives you the nutrients that you need, but also kind of keeps you sustained on a healthy eating path.
Mm-hmm. How did you first get started on your healthy eating path? What route did you take to get to where you are?
I grew up in a household, we're all from England, and I grew up in a household that really loved all different types of food, especially things that were intrinsically healthy, like Japanese food. As in the 70s, I was eating Japanese food here in New York, which was kind of highly unusual at that point.
Right.
But my mother always was very careful about no sugary cereals in the house, no sodas in the house. And when I had kids, when I was pregnant, I became very conscious of what I was putting in my body and how that would have a direct effect on my health and, more importantly, my kids' health. So I became even more, just cognizant of eating well. And also being in the food industry, it's actually very hard to eat healthfully because especially I was at Food & Wine and Bon Appetit and Epicurious and Gourmet.com and so I was able to eat, you know, incredibly well and beautifully, but, oftentimes eating, meals that were filled with butter, tons of butter and tons of salt and, you know, those types of things. And so it became more and more important to me as I got older to really focus on what I was putting in my body. And then I started writing a cookbook for kids and families called Real Food for Healthy Kids that really tried to break down how to eat well and healthfully and still love cooking and eating in the kitchen for families. And I think that was kind of the path that really led me right to where I am now. That was a book that Mrs. Obama actually had apparently, and the First Lady's office contacted me in 2010, and that's how I started working with the White House to help promote Let's Move and come up with initiatives to help promote healthy eating. And so I've really kind of, as I've, gone along my path, it's become more and more focused on just getting other people to learn how easy and wonderful and delicious it is to eat healthily.
Mm-hmm. Well, clean plates, it seems like it's a perfect fit for you to, to kind
I think
of
so, yeah.
merge those things. Yeah, because so much of the gourmet, like you heard the little, my little drama that happened this week when I went out to a very nice restaurant and I was served a plate of boiled vegetables. Because there's so much attention to really good food and locally sourcing and starting with fresh ingredients, but they still are, piling on the butter and piling on the salt and, and there's ways to make it healthier. And it's really a wonderful service that Clean Plates does and that you do to show people how you can transform some of those desires and find ways to do them more healthfully.
Oh, thanks. That's really what we really aim to do, is just to help people think, okay, I'm hungry. It's 4 o'clock. What am I making for dinner tonight? Oh, okay, mustard greens are something that are super healthy for you. They're in season right now. They're really inexpensive. I can pick them up anywhere. Here's 3 things to do with mustard greens. I know I'm getting now all my phytonutrients and minerals and fiber and all that good stuff, and I'm eating something that's super delicious. So,
right.
And in 20 minutes. So, all of these things are kind of critical. I think the food industry really, as someone who has covered the food industry for so long, I've seen Americans' palates really change and grow up and become incredibly sophisticated and embrace kind of the foodie culture. And now they're really embracing healthy foods and understanding why it's so important.
Yeah, when I had this little dinner party and made this patizio, the other people at the table were not vegan, and they were just saying how, 20 years ago when they first met me, and they were, they thought of me as an oddball and, someone that was weird and ate funny and, and now they're all eating like that. And, and everyone's more aware of it. And it's not a fringe diet anymore. It's becoming so much more mainstream and people are really embracing it. It's really exciting to be a part of it at this point now.
Everyone from baby boomers to 8-year-olds are embracing it. It's become the norm. So, it's been so extraordinary for me to see children really get in on the bandwagon and get excited about it. So I think it portends a great future for us.
Yes, absolutely. That's why school gardens, getting them young, it's really exciting. But let's take that couple-minute break, and when we come back, I want to, get some tips from you on how people can make these transitions and stick with some of their resolutions in the new year. So anyway, can you share with everybody, some tips that you have for how they can stick with some of these New Year's resolutions?
Absolutely. I know that, January 1st, people hit the reset button a lot of times, and they are determined that this is the year that they're going to, kind of change their course and cleanse their diet a little bit and clean up their eating ways. So, if everyone's full of good intentions, and then as, the gray days descend upon us and, we're tired and exhausted and stressed out, it's harder and harder to do those types of things. So a few little tips to kind of keep you on the path of good eating would include moderation. I think it's important. I personally feel like the way that I've been able to stay on a very good eating path and to eat as well as I do is to allow myself a treat every day. And for me, treats are usually around something that's sweet. So, whether I have yogurt with fruit and dried fruit and granola at night as a little treat, or some dark chocolate energy balls or something like that, something to me that speaks of kind of a, a little luxury and a little treat, I think that's very important for people. So as long as the treat that you're having is not, you know, kind of a big frosted donut or, you know, a box of, you know, sugary cookies, I think everyone deserves a treat, and that enables you to feel good about, you know, satisfied and yet still able to, you know, eat 80 or 90% in a very healthy manner. So I think that's important. Another thing that's important is to start to cook. You know, I think it's really important that people learn just even the basics, the rudimentary basics of how to cook, because you can't really take control of anything until you have your own skills and tools. So a lot of places, you know, if you're getting even takeout from healthier places, they're still putting a lot of, you know, oil and tons of seasoning and so all those types of things. I mean, you don't even know what's going into them. So it's great to be able to kind of cook and determine what is really going into your body and how much. So I think that's really kind of critical to any healthy eating diet. And when I say cook, that could just mean, you know, making salads every night or just roasting or poaching some, you know, organic chicken, or, you know, just doing very simple things are incredibly easy. They take 3 minutes. You know, there's no reason not to. Even making your own hummus takes 2 minutes. So just making those little changes will really help sustain you. Trying new foods is another thing, because it kind of keeps life interesting. So, for instance, as I mentioned, mustard greens is one thing that I just had last night. We have a big story on the cleanplates.com about why mustard greens are so great to eat right now and how they're the new kale. So trying different things that you've never had before, like mustard greens or seaweed, as we were just talking about, that is another way to kind of keep things lively and keep you on the path. And then lastly, I would say don't beat yourself up. I think it's really important that, you know, you get up every day and you try to do your best, but don't get down on yourself, because if you do, it becomes a vicious cycle. So if you get down on yourself, then you end up eating something that's really bad for you, just as a kind of, you know, to make yourself feel better, and then you feel bad that you ate that, and then it's this vicious cycle. You get up in the morning and think, oh, why did I eat that? So I think, you know, kind of giving yourself a break, and by having a treat every night, you are actually giving yourself a break. So I think those are kind of some common sense ways to stay on the path of healthy eating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the idea also of trying something new. That's one of the things that sometimes people complain about, but I also think it's one of the lovely parts of a CSA, you know, when you're part of a community-supported agricultural group and you get a weekly box of vegetables. Very often there's a vegetable in there that you've never used before and you don't know what to do with. And like I said, some people find that frustrating, but I always found it really exciting, you know, like, what can I do with this? And, you know, search out that new recipe. And but also what you were saying about starting to cook and knowing what's in your food. I talk to people about that a lot, because if you're eating out all the time and you don't know what's in your food, chances are, I mean, I go to Restaurant Depot when I need to buy aluminum pans and gloves, you know, cooking gloves and all that. But there's very little food there that I really can buy. And most of the food, you know, most restaurants are getting their food at that place or places that are similar. And there's very little organic. There's very little GMO-free. It's really mainstream food. And so if you're cooking at home and you're eating, you know, high-quality ingredients most of the time, then those times that you do go out, you don't have to worry about it so much, because it's a small part of your diet. It's not your everyday food. But if you're getting your food every day from a source that you don't know, you're really taking chances, because the majority of the food's not good.
That's so right. And, you know, I feel like the 80-20 rule of life really applies to eating. You know, you try 80%, you eat well, and, you know, you try to get at least 30 minutes of active exercise in, even if it's 30 minutes of walking. And then the 20%, you know, you let slide a little bit. It's okay. So that I think that is kind of critical to long-time success.
Mm-hmm. Another issue that we've all heard about so much, and I think, I mean, I can't even imagine if my kids were young today, you know, my kids, we missed a lot of the internet stuff with my kids when they were young and vulnerable. But kids are exposed to so much junk food marketing. How can parents get around that? How can they try to limit their kids to the exposure to that junk food marketing and trying to encourage them to eat healthier?
You know, I think that that used to be such a huge issue. Two things have happened. One is that junk food marketing and advertising has become much more regulated and self-regulated. So I think that that is becoming a little bit less of a problem. But the other thing that's happening at the same time is that kids themselves know about this. This is not news to them. And one of my big messages always to parents is that they should not be talking down to their kids in any way. Kids are incredibly bright. I mean, these kids can do coding. They can speak, you know, Mandarin. I mean, they're just crazy bright kids now.
Right.
and so you just need to say to them, look, if you can't pronounce an ingredient, you've never seen that ingredient, chances are you should not be eating that. Who wants to eat something that you've never heard of that seems to be made up in a lab? You know, you don't want to eat that stuff. Yuck. You know, and so, I mean, just talking straight to them and explaining that, you know, what red dye does and how it's, you know, got bugs in it or whatever bizarre thing it is. You know, just pointing those things out, they will quickly think, oh my gosh, there's no way I ever want to eat something like that. They're very curious, and this is a great generation of kids. They're really engaged and want to help each other and are very great stewards of the earth. And I think you just point it out to them. You know, anytime they see a cereal commercial and they say, you know, I want to get that cereal, you just say, okay, read to me how much sugar is in, you know, on that label. Tell me what it says. And then read to the ingredients, and you tell me if you think you should have it. You know, let them take kind of ownership and be in charge. That way they feel like they're actually having a say in their own health, which is very critical. They want to feel like they are in charge. So you need to give them the tools to say, okay, you're in charge. Here's the information. You know, I'm explaining to you why this is not good. And now you are going to make the decisions and realize that, in fact, that may not be good for you. So doing that 9 times out of 10 is really all you need to do. One other thing I always recommend is that parents have to be a fervent press person for things like spinach and broccoli. I mean, they have to not just say you should eat this, but parents have to be eating it themselves.
Yeah,
and
to role model
the deliciousness and the yumminess and model behavior saying this is amazing. So one thing I was very attuned to as I was my kids were growing up is I would purposely eat like tons of salads and tons of leafy greens in front of my kids and say, oh my gosh, this is so good. You cannot wait to try this. This is amazing. You know, trying to sell all of those things is very important. So in the same way that you don't want your kids to be seeing you kind of walking around sloshed with, you know, a vodka and tonic, just the same exact thing. You want to kind of model good behavior in front of your children.
Absolutely. And I think that tip of, you know, really talking to them and letting them feel like they're making the decision to not want to eat something bad for them is critical, as opposed to you not allowing them to have it. I think that's
exactly, because as soon as you say, I'm not allowing you, that's setting up a different dynamic. You know, it's adding emotion to food, which we don't want to do, and it's starting a tug of war that will continue for years on and could end up in, you know, eating disorders and all these types of things. So the less we can, you know, attach emotion and power play to food, the better off we are as parents.
Mm-hmm. I also found bringing the kids into the kitchen and actually cooking with them is a wonderful way to get them more excited about trying things. And they actually, you know, peel the carrot and do the stirring and, you know, are involved in the process of cooking, then they want to try what they made.
1,000%. I totally believe that the more you get kids into the kitchen, the more excited they're going to be about cooking. And that's one of the reasons why we started the Healthy Lunchtime Challenge and Kids Say Dinner, which was a national recipe contest for kids across the country. and one winner from each state came with a parent or a grandparent or a guardian to the White House, and we celebrated those kids at a big annual event in the East Room. And all of those kids cooked amazing, amazing recipes, and they were all with things like quinoa and, you know, salmon, and, you know, it was fantastic food that they were, you know, 8 and 9 years old making up by themselves.
That's really exciting. That's great. Yeah, Michelle Obama will be missed. She really did a lot to bring awareness to kids' healthy lunch programs and an organic garden on the front lawn. We're really in for a change.
We'll see. You know, I'm hoping, I've just got my fingers crossed that, you know, all of those things will continue in whatever guise they're supposed to continue in, but that, you know, we've ignited, and she has ignited, you know, a passion for this, for the younger generation, and I really feel like that can only continue to blossom.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, kids are smart, so, you know, the kids are going to want it. I mean, even Trump has a kid, you know?
So, exactly, and I'm sure he's eating, you know, well. I'm sure Melania is on top of that, so.
Right. Right. One trend that didn't get mentioned that I would like to hear your thoughts on is apple cider vinegar. Have you been seeing that coming into your realm a lot?
Absolutely. Apple cider vinegar is, you know, it's been used for so long. I mean, it was such a thing to do in the early 1900s, and it kind of fell out of favor. It's such a great ingredient. It's just, in fact, we have an article like 10 ways to use apple cider vinegar, and some of them are to eat, and some of them are actually to use as a cleanser because you can also clean with it. It's a wonderful ingredient. It's so healthy for you. It really kind of perks up the flavor of foods when you're cooking with them. A little splash towards the end really makes, especially if you're doing like a vegetable saute or a delicious butternut squash soup, something like that, it really wakens the flavor of foods. And so you're packing really good nutrients into anything that you're adding apple cider vinegar into. A lot of people do, in fact, I was doing this for my husband a while back, a lot of people are doing apple cider vinegar chasers, you know, where you get up in the morning and you have apple cider vinegar, maybe watered down or, you know, put
it
into juices
turmeric
or a smoothie. Ah, yes, that's fantastic. And
apple cider vinegar,
your
turmeric and pepper every morning just to, you know, get myself going. It's great anti-inflammatory.
Wow.
Cleans out your blood, you know. It's good for
diabetes,
your gut, lowers cholesterol, all that
stuff.
Apple
cider vinegar is for, yep. And the whole notion of gut health is another huge thing that's going on right now, the probiotic movement and the understanding that, in fact, all this healthy eating may be for naught if your gut is leaky, as they say. So you really need to kind of make sure that your stomach is, the lining is healthy and that it can transmit all of these great vitamins and nutrients and minerals that are actually being absorbed into, and making sure that they are actually absorbed into your bloodstream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all great stuff. And, you know, and it's very exciting to be a part of a movement that is so alive and constantly changing, and people are really opening up to it. So it is, you know, it's wonderful to see how Clean Plates has grown. It's wonderful for them to have you on board, for sure. And I'm just really very happy for you. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Ravani. It was a pleasure to be on your show, and how fantastic that you're doing this. I'm thrilled for you, and I'm sure you've got thousands of passionate listeners. So thank you so much for having me on.
You're welcome. And everyone, if you want to find Clean Plates, it's cleanplates.com. And sign up for their newsletter. It's really great. Thank you, Tanya, so much. And everybody out there listening, thank you so much for joining us. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I hope to see many of you at the march. Bye for now.